Hello, everybody. My name is Miguel de Icaza, and I am one of the founders of Xamarin, a company who focused on bringing .NET love to Android and iOS and helping the life of .NET developers better everywhere. I have a lot of interesting things to show you today. I'm actually very, very excited about to show you some of the things that we've been working on in the last year. But because of the announcements today, earlier today, Scott Guthrie announced that Xamarin was going to be made available to everybody with Visual Studio, that we're going to have a community edition. It was going to be available for all pro users and so on. I'm going to spend the first part of this talk talking a little bit about the background of Xamarin, about how you develop applications with Xamarin, because this is the first time that we reach a larger audience. Xamarin was historically a niche product, a product for those that that wanted to spend a lot of money on it. So, So we're going to do a little bit of an intro, and I'll try to go fast here. The good news is that there's a lot of good resources for you to go deeper onto these things. We have Xamarin University, where you can learn. As part of the announcement today, there's a lot of online sessions for self-learning. There's also, we have great documentation, tutorials, and walkthroughs. And also, we have a bunch of experts at the booth in the main hall. If you have questions, we have a lot of people there that can help you. So I'm still going to give you an overview, but I won't go too much into detail so I can go to the super exciting stuff. So today's announcement, I think, is fabulous. You should go get it if you haven't got it yet. There's been never been a better time to start developing mobile applications with .NET or to switch your development to .NET. You get really the best of both worlds. You get the best that .NET has to offer, either C# or F# or even VB. And you get the IDE that you love, or if you're a Mac user like me, you get to use Xamarin Studio. And we've blended .NET with the native operating system, object systems, right? So we've blended it with Android, we've blended it with iOS, we've blended it with the Mac. So, all right. So there's a couple of things that I wanted to talk to you about today, which is really the benefits of using Xamarin and .NET are many. So either if you're starting a mobile project today, or if you already started a mobile project and you're maintaining a bunch of teams inside your company, really, to us, what is really exciting is first that you can support more customers. So if you don't have an existing mobile effort right now at your company or your organization, now you can reach more people. You can reach more people, people that use mobile devices and that want to have a native experience. Second, Xamarin was designed so you could take advantage of everything that is native about the platform. Both Android and iOS are platforms that move very, very rapidly. They introduce many new features on a very predictable cadence. And each release surfaces new hardware capabilities and new web service capabilities. So with Xamarin, you manage to get all of those things for your applications. And in fact, there's always a race. Every time there's a new Google Play Services release or a new iOS release, there's always a race for developers to adopt those features so they can capture more customers. And finally, by using C# for your applications, a single code base, you still learn the different models of Android and iOS, but you can share a tremendous amount of code. You fix the bug once, right, on all your shared code, you fix the bug once, you implement the features once, and when you fix bugs, they're fixed across the board. So we've had great experiences with a lot of companies that adopted the product way when it was too expensive, and they lowered their development costs and their maintenance costs. So this is why you should consider either starting your projects with C# or F#, or consider switching from other, maybe not as sophisticated languages. So there's a couple of things that were announced today. So in addition to making Visual Studio available to everybody, Xamarin available to everybody has Visual Studio, Scott Guthrie announced today that we're open sourcing all of the features in the Mono runtime that we kept proprietary. We're also relicensing it under a license that allows the use on every imaginable scenario. We used to license it under LGPL, which is a license that has some strings attached, and we also licensed it commercially so that we could have a viable business. Now that Microsoft is essentially owns Xamarin, they no longer need that business, and everybody can use the Mono runtime for everything they want. So you no longer need to license Mono. You can use it in any possible scenario. Not only you can put it on any imaginable device, like the PlayStation or Android, iOS, or any embedded device, but one thing that we've been pushing is the adoption of the Mono runtime inside an application. So using the .NET runtime to augment the capabilities of an application, similar to how Unity extended their game engine with the .NET runtime, we want to see more of those things. We're working a few things ourselves, contributing to other projects to do that, but you now can also embed the .NET runtime into your application, and with something I'm gonna show you later today, you're gonna have a great experience extending your actual code with an embeddable .NET runtime. So, the thing to keep in mind about .NET is that it is a very comprehensive framework. It really helps the productivity of developers because it has a garbage collector, so it frees your mind from being a bookkeeper or an accountant sort of thing. You can essentially experiment, you can essentially be very productive, and also it comes with a very strong type system. So essentially the compiler does a lot of the work for you. And in fact, if you go one step further and use F#, the code writes itself and you write it in a third of the time that you do it with F#. So essentially, .NET is my favorite language. I might be a little bit biased because I've been working on this for almost 14 years, 15, doesn't matter, a long time. Now, again, like I said, I wanted to share with you guys the model that we've used. If you guys have used Windows in the past, if you're targeting UWP or WPF, this is roughly what happens. You have a shared set of libraries running in gray, right? Things like networking, data access, I/O, and so on. And when you build a UI application for Windows, you use these other namespaces and libraries. Things like Microsoft.font, Windows Storage, and so on. So what we've done with Xamarin is we essentially give you all these gray boxes that you have there, and this is not always going there. All right, so we've essentially given you all the same gray boxes, but also we've augmented it with the native APIs of the platform. And we've done two things here. One, we've done a one-to-one mapping to every API on iOS and Android. So if it's available for Swift or Objective-C, it's available to C#. Same thing with Android. If it's available in Java, it's available in C#. And we've mapped it in a way that follows the .NET framework design guidelines. The second thing that we did is that we integrated the object system. So it's not only about surfacing the API, it's also about making sure that the object systems work together. So when you create a subclass in C# of a native API, it becomes a native subclass, right? So if you subclass UIView, the runtime, the operating system has no way of knowing that this is not a UIView. It just happens to be implemented in C#. And the same thing for Android. You can create subclasses in C#, and there just happen to be subclasses of Java. So Java has no way of knowing that this happens to be written in a different language. And we've done exactly the same thing with Android. And I don't know why this thing is, this really is not going, is not following my clicks. So let me talk to you about a couple of strategies that you can use to share your code. Kevin Gallo yesterday showed this MyHealth app, which is a native, it's a native application on each platform, on Android, iOS, and Windows. And there's a lot of shared code. So a lot of the business logic, a lot of the communication is shared, but you have different user experiences. They look alike, but they have different user experiences and idioms on each platform. And I'll share with you some of the common things that people do to share code with C#. Essentially, you try to put all of your, I mean, this sounds pretty obvious when you look at the diagram, but we'll get into the details. You wanna have some shared C# logic, right? And then you're gonna have your iOS specific, Android specific, or Windows specific pieces. Some of you might have built Windows Forms apps and WPF apps and supported both UIs, so it would be a similar exercise. Or some of you might have an ASP.NET front-end and also Web API front-end, and you would also have to do this sort of code sharing between those two. So There's three major ways to share code between those two. Now, my personal favorite, and this is highly debated with the more purist people in the company, but my favorite is the shared project approach. Shared projects are essentially projects that were introduced in Visual Studio 2015, where you dump source code and resources into a special project that you reference. Now, this is interesting because this is a project that is not actually compiled on its own. It never produces a assembly, right? It's only source code that gets included with the rest of our application when it gets compiled. So I think this is a very simple mod. It's very simple to understand, has very little friction, and leads to, in my opinion, very clean and very maintainable code. Now, this is suitable for, in my opinion, this is very suitable for applications. Now, the other approach is called portable class libraries. And with portable class libraries, you create a project, which is a portable class library, and the output of this will be an assembly. And this assembly then gets shared across all of your platforms. This requires a little bit of more engineering, requires more a little bit more of a contract design. It's a little bit more cumbersome. And personally, I wouldn't use that for an app, but some of my friends do. But I would definitely use it for libraries. If you want to share libraries or you're producing a library for others to consume, this is the right approach. This is the best thing that you can do on those scenarios. There is one downside. Portable class libraries tend to have a more limited API surface. So sometimes you have to do things like some dependency injection so you can plug a logger or a console write line. I'm a lazy man. I like to put console write lines in my code, so I go with the first approach. And finally, the third thing that you can use is reuse existing components and NuGets that pack a lot of functionality for you to reuse across these platforms. So now the obvious question is, why don't you do some abstractions for simple things for us? There's a lot of things that really you don't need to get to the bottom of the API and get every possible feature of the platform. For example, you probably want something that just has your phone say, hello world, right? So you don't really need to learn everything about AV Foundation speech synthesizer and learning about audio sessions and everything that goes with it, or the specifics of Android, the specifics of Windows. So in scenarios like this, where you have very simple functionality, where you don't really need to tweak every possible feature of the platform, we've created this thing called plugins. And we have about 50 plugins, I believe, and these are for very simple features. Think of it as very simple features. They're not supposed to be big frameworks. They're just for things that are very common, and you don't need a lot of customization around. If you want more customization, then you drop to the native APIs. But for most things like speech, camera access, settings, connectivity, location, and so on, you can get away with just using a plugin. Now, the second thing that we did is many of our users said, your product is fantastic, but we actually need to produce hundreds of input pages every week. In particular, people dealing with legal issues or insurance companies or anything that has to do with regulation, they usually have to produce a lot of UI specific to different states, specific to different countries. And while they love the idea of building a native, beautiful iOS API and have the entry lines bounce just a little bit or, wiggle at the right amount and have a special gradient when you type, sometimes you don't need that much. Sometimes you need a very simple data entry, like sign up page or so on. So what we did is we created Xamarin Forms. And Xamarin Forms is a small UI abstraction. So we abstract some of the elements for creating simple user interfaces. It doesn't do everything. So you'll find yourself doing a lot of your work in Xamarin Forms, and whenever you need some fine-tuning, you will drop down to the native APIs. But it helps for a lot of scenarios, and in fact, we have very large applications written entirely in Xamarin Forms. So not every application needs to consume or tune every bit of the native platform. The good news about Xamarin Forms is that it's also getting open-sourced. We didn't open-source those things today. We're going to be open-sourcing in the next couple of weeks. We just didn't have time to ship the Visual Studio integration and open source since in the last 10 days. So But many of you have told us that you want to go beyond that. And in many cases, plugins did their job, forms did their job, but there were a couple of gaps missing. So we recently launched our 2D graphics library. This is a 2D graphics vector composited library for rendering 2D bitmaps and images. And it's based on Skia. Skia is the graphics engine that powers Google Chrome. So if you use Google Chrome or you use Android, you're using Skia. It is incredibly powerful. It is very efficient. And if you have a GPU, it will use your GPU to do all of its rasterization, to do your special effects, shader effects, and so on. It is actively developed, of course, because it comes directly from Google. And what we've done is we've packaged Skia as a cross-platform Nuget. It's a cross-platform Nuget, and it works on Android, works on iOS, works on Windows, and works on Macintosh. So you just add this reference, and now you have 2D graphics across the board. We're also adding support for .NET Core, so people doing ASP.NET applications can render graphics on the server side. And if you slap in a GPU in there, you'll also get GPU acceleration there. So we're very happy about this library because it fills a big gap on the cross-platform story. You could create forms, but if you wanted to put a little plot chart, you had to do it natively on each platform. Now we can do it all at once. The other thing that we've done is, just like we found Skia, and it was a fantastic 2D library, we found Urho. Urho is a 3D retained graphics engine and also game engine. It does 3D, it both does 3D graphics, but it also does physics, object collision, terrains, pathfinding. It is very comprehensive, and what we've done is we've bound the Urho library to C#. We've created a beautiful, beautiful API, very enjoyable to use. Again, it's GPU accelerated, supports Windows, supports the Mac, supports iOS and Android. Again, it's a Nuget cross-platform. It is actively developed both the foundation and the binding, and we're gonna be contributing to the effort so that it goes across all platforms. Anyway, we have time, I'll show you that. Now, I wanna switch to the inspector and workbooks, and this is where I wanted to spend the core of the talk. You saw it earlier today in the presentation. It's this live coding system that we have. This was born out of our desire of making C# more approachable and making it more enjoyable. We actually demoed interactive C# back in 2008. It was only available on Linux, so it didn't, you know, most of you didn't use it. We'll get there. And over the years, we've done small improvements. We finally decided to focus on it. So I want to give you a show. I want to give you a demo of what it does. Now, there's two separate ways of interacting with this. One is the inspector, and it's very much like a web inspector. So when you go to a web page and you hit the Command Shift I, and you can start looking at the source code, exploring the different elements in the UI and modifying them live, that's what you can expect from the inspector. The inspector supports Android, supports iOS, supports Macintosh, and supports WPF. And we can add more over time, so very broad support. And then you happen to have a C# shell. So in addition to the inspecting capabilities, you have a live C# shell that can execute your C# code against the running process. So you have a running application, and you can type in C# commands, and they will run in that context. Workbooks are, and they're basically the same thing. The difference is one is designed to inspect your live app, and the other one is designed for you to learn. And workbooks are the document that I showed today in the keynote, where you have a markdown file with documentation and explanation, and it has C# code embedded in the middle. So I want to show you, I have some slides for those of you online that might want to take a look at that, but I'm gonna jump directly to the IDE. So first I'm gonna give you a taste of this. Now let me minimize this thing. What? Oh, I gotta press the button. Yes. 6. All right. So, you've probably seen, this is powered by Roslyn, actually. So, this uses the same technology that is used by Visual Studio. That has several advantages. We get state-of-the-art code completion, and also it means that every time that Microsoft releases an update to the language, we immediately get it on this system. So, you can do very basic stuff like hello. So I'm gonna evaluate that. It's gonna evaluate as a C# expression. I know, not very exciting. Hello.length, maybe? I know, very exciting. I'm gonna use a system IO, and I did this a few years ago. From X in, probably also need link. And then from X in directory.getFiles, since I'm in Unix, I'm gonna get the files in the etc. directory, and I'm gonna select that. So this is giving me an IEnumerable. You can see that we render some of the values from the IEnumerable. It doesn't render them all, but I can also render it as an object. We'll get back to this in a second. Now let me go back to this line and say, well, actually, that's not what I wanted. Let me change that. So I wanna say where X ends with the word conf. So I wanna get all the configuration files, select X, and now the result is only those ones. Now, let's do something a little bit more interesting. From X in directory.getFiles, users Miguel. So I'm gonna get the files in my directory. In fact, let me do this instead. Let me get the list of PNG files in my home directory. What did I do here? Directory.getFiles. What did I do wrong? What? Semicolon? Oh, look at that. And actually, I want star.png. Okay, so I have 4 images. I don't know what's in there. This might be dangerous, so work with me here for a second. All right, mono Android looks pretty safe, so. So I'm gonna load users Miguel mono android.png. Oh, that is very nice. So it displays the image online. So what we've done is that all the return types that are coming back from C# come with a type, and we've provided custom renderers for many of these things. There's a couple of interesting renderers that we have. One of them gives you an object member view. So essentially, it's a way of exploring the properties of an object from a .NET perspective. And the other renderers, they're custom for each one of these. We have things for images, for colors, for animations, for all kinds of other things, and it's an extensible system. So in this particular case, it's an image, and because images tend to have an alpha channel, we have a little slider here so you can, well, that doesn't have an alpha channel so you can't see anything, but we'll get to that in a second. But I could change the alpha channel here so you could see what happens in that image. In the particular case of images, we have an image renderer, an xdump renderer. So let's take a look at that. So this is just beautiful. So for those of you that that can decode in your head, this is what's in there. Or we can look at the object member view of this, right? And this is what the object member view does. This is essentially what you would get from exploring your properties on Visual Studio. And you can see that we have a lot of I started this workbook in iOS mode, so everything that I'm using here are the iOS properties, so orientation. You can see that it's a UI image orientation. You can see the superclass, the size of the object, and so on. And it's interesting because iOS uses floating point values for sizes, so that's why it's rendered as a floating point. Now, let's live life dangerously, so let's do this. So users Miguel, select New UI, no, UI image from file, X. So there we go. So this is an enumerable return, right? And the first image, God knows what it is. I don't know, it's some tiny image. What is that? Untitled.png, probably not very inspiring. And then I got this mono Android picture, which is probably very old. Interpret cat, ready for provisioning, and some other file. In fact, just how old is that file? Now, what is very interesting about this is that you can start exploring the APIs on iOS. For example, the key window, in fact, let me show you this, help. So if you type help, you get a set of commands that will give you a little bit of context of things that you can do in this particular context. So this is the iOS context. You would get something different for Android. So the key window is a concept from iOS that refers to the main window that is currently focused on the application. So I'm going to do root view controller, and I'm going to assign a, what would that be, contacts, maybe Twitter. So I'm going to create a compose tweet view controller. And when I assign it, it will pop that right there. So this is the iOS native tweet composer. And all I've done is I said, hey, make this your root window. Now, let me create just an empty one so we can play a little bit with this. I'm just going to create a VI view controller. And I'm going to assign it to this. So it's a blank one. Key window dot root view controller. So I'm going to assign that to it. So nothing in there. Let me add a couple of things there. So on the keynote today, you saw, I showed a map. So I'm going to do the same here. So I'm going to create a MK map view. And I'm going to create it with the size of UI screen dot main screen dot bounce. My map. Okay, and then I'm gonna add it. I'm gonna add it to my view controller. So who was it? It was x.view.addSubView my. And again, so here's my map. So as you can see, this is actually very interesting in terms of how you learn this thing. For example, I can say, well, what is my region? The same property that I showed on the keynote today. So it's a coordinate region, so I can expand this guy. I can expand this guy here. And we have a custom renderer for locations. So you can see that that I have an embedded map view inside the visualizer. And I also can, for the convenience, I can render these values with different formats. Now, so this is the sort of thing that you can do. And using core location, like that. All right, what was that thing that we did today that was very neat? So I just learned to use this API yesterday. Is it CL core location geolocator, geocoder? Await, no. Async, geocode address async. And this API is very neat because it returns the location for a human readable description of something. So for example, the Empire State. So let me just do a wait on this guy, and then let me fetch the first element, and then I'm going to get the location. So this is very neat. So we like the idea that we're going to make C-sharp a very approachable language, and F-sharp as well. This is incredibly powerful because in fact, I haven't used any of the mapping capabilities until last week. Before this, we mostly focused on getting the features in place. So I've been actually rehearsing this all last night and this morning, just trying out things that would be interesting to show you. For example, what is the other one? I can make an async method, async task of, what is this, location? I get string S, so I can do await new CL geocoder dot, or you can have this guy, the string. Does this make sense? In fact, I can do this, right? First dot location. What am I missing here? What? Task of what? What? One at a time. Is it a task of CL location? No, but I'm still missing something here. What am I missing? Oh, we have way too many parentheses here. Okay, woof, there we go. So now I can say things like, what is that, Paris? Oh, we gotta await that puppy. Okay, so now I got Paris. What else can I do? London, actually San Francisco. Hipster, let me see, hipster town. Inappropriate. Now let's take a look at the inspector capabilities of this. So I'm going to just quit this puppy. Just cancel this. Let me close this. Don't save. Oh, I didn't show you this. Let me start it again. Whew. Okay, we're gonna do this again from the top. All right, so what did I start? I said using, I'm not gonna bore you with all of this, but I'm gonna say something like directory, what do you do here? I'm lost, guys, I'm lost. UI color.red. Okay, this is beautiful. We got a color, multiple renderers, object members, and so on. So what is interesting here, and this is the, so far we've been using this as a REPL, like an interactive read of all print loop. I think that it's kind of too nerdy to call it that. I like to call it interactive C#. I think it's a better name, but anyways. And if you see this little thing, if you hover here, I can click there, and then I can say, I can start writing a document. So I can say, introduction. The first thing to get started with the workbooks is to put a nice and bold using statement in your code, like this. All right, and I'm gonna just put up, I'm gonna bold that puppy. And then I'm gonna say, now we're going to fetch a color. In this case, we're going with red. I wonder if I can make this, I wonder if I can add a title, big topics. So I should probably make this a level one heading. So I'm gonna go and save this. I'm gonna save this thing. I'm gonna put it on TMP so you get an, oh, there it is. I'm gonna put in TMP, I'm gonna call it foo.workbook. And now I'm gonna show you that file in Emacs. So that's what it is. It is a markdown file, and all it does is it has this tiny little header at the beginning that has a little bit of metadata. And the metadata says, it has the execution mode, we'll talk about that later, maybe, perhaps something. The platform that it needs to run, so it says this workbook has been designed to run in the context of iOS. And it doesn't matter right now, but it has a packages list so you can insert NuGet packages. So if you reference a NuGet package here, how do you do this? Where is this? Add a package. So if I wanted to add a package here, like, what do you guys use? Newton something or other? JSON, some JSON stuff. JSON. No, or Urho. I can add Urho there. So if I wanted to add my 3D library, this is how I would add it, right? So as you can see, the interesting thing about this is just Markdown. And what we're doing is that we're turning all of our documentation, all of our Xamarin documentation to learn Android and iOS into these things. They're essentially Markdown. They look pretty on GitHub, and they happen to be executables that you can use to learn. And this is what I showed today on the keynote. Now, The other piece that is very interesting, how am I doing on time? Perfect. The other thing that is very interesting is, let me show you now, let me switch gears. This is the application that Scott referenced at the end of his keynote, which is we built a reference application that shows how to integrate multiple pieces together, Azure IoT, Azure backend services, Xamarin, Android and Xamarin iOS for the user interface, as well as a Windows UI. And I happen to have this one running here on iOS. So I'm going to run it now. And I probably should use a smaller simulator, but that's OK. Because this way takes way too much space. Yeah, you see it takes way too much space. So let me reduce that. Okay, so let me scale that. And so this is the application. It's an application that was built, you don't have enough background, but the idea is that we bought this extension that you can plug into your car. Many new cars have this system where they provide data that you can actually monitor and extract. So your cell phone actually connects to this and extracts the data. And the idea is that you can run this app to see these things. So this one right now is using a simulated data. The simulator is sending the data about the going on the road. But we have a bunch of existing trips, right? So right now it thinks that it's Scott Guthrie, and it's showing his trip. We also had, Vivace, that was pretty good. So this is, I believe, a ride, bike ride that James Montemagno did. And you can see the location of the device at any given point. We cheated here. James was on a bike, and he was generating the data. Anyways, this is the application. And I want to show you something interesting here. The inspector is a capability where your IDE can now connect to a live app. So when I click this little button, it launches again our workbook support, but now you have this little button, the inspector, and you can select elements in the UI. So right now it's selected, when I clicked on this thing, it assigned it to that variable, and it's this guy. So you get all the properties of that variable. Now I'm gonna use a convenience method called capture. So it takes a screenshot of that. So that's what the actual view was. And because there's a hierarchy, this just took a screenshot of that particular view. So let's take a look at why that was. So now I can get a 3D view of this, and now you can see that, oh, it turns out that the topmost view, right, the one that I selected, only contains those elements. Well, that makes sense. So you can get a 3D view of how your application is built and debug it. You can also take a look at the hierarchy for your application here. So it's very easy. I'm taking this application, so I'm going to click on this thing. And what that does is that it assigns it to this variable, selected view. So now it's a trip map view. So I can expand it here, and I can look at a lot of these properties. Or again, I can just take a screenshot. So I can say capture selected view. And this, because it's the bottommost view, not the one that was just drawing some things in the top, it actually shows me the whole screenshot. Now, let's take a look at this again. Where are you? Selected view. I can just go here. So, there is something very neat here. Of course, because we have a coordinate, it gets rendered there live. Very nice. But there's a very interesting property called latest polyline. And that actually has all the data points that were plotted in the map. And what is very nice about this, let me zoom in here, is that we're going to be cheating. And we're going to take this guy, and we're going to claim that we actually went this way. So I'm going to, and I want to show you that as I'm making edits on the inspector, it's actually getting reflected on the app. Not only is it getting reflected on the app, but if you look at the miles, if you look at the miles display, can you see the miles display up there? The one that says 0.83? All right, so it's updating live and recomputing the actual distance as I'm moving it on the inspector. So this is a great debugging aid. We've used it in a number of applications already, and it's very enjoyable. In fact, What I like about this personally is that I don't need to launch an IDE, I don't need to launch a project, I don't need to create a sample thing to test a couple of APIs. You just go file new workbook for iOS, Mac, Windows, whatever you want to do, and you can start typing APIs. You can learn what they do without getting into the, you know, without having 100 little projects in your project directory, you know, app one, app two, app three, app four, app five, app six, app seven, just to test a different thing. So from a learning perspective, we think that this has a lot of potential, not only because of the workbooks, but because you can interact with C# in the same way that people have interacted with the web up until now. So now let me open a couple of other workbooks that I wanted to show you. Let me close this thing, and let me get rid of this thing. Yeah. And where's the inspector? So let me open a couple of these ones. Skia, I'm going to show you the Skia one just because this is the library that I just talked about. It's been a void in the cross-platform story of .NET. We used to have system drawing, but it wasn't quite pixel perfect. And now we have the capability of having a pixel perfect 2D graphics library. So this is just a document that we produce for people to get started with Skia. And it walks you through the whole process. And in this particular case, I'm just going to go right to the end and execute the whole thing. So this little function draws a spiral. You would think that drawing a spiral would be easier, but I guess it's not. And this is one of those cases where you can actually see the value of rendering the alpha, right? And I can actually go and change this. I can say canvas draw line from 0, 0 to 200 comma paint. Right? So I just re-execute this thing, and there it is. So very excited about this. All right. So this is Skia. Now, let me show you something a little bit more interesting. I'm going to show you. I know that you guys love your 3D charts because you're business people, you're Microsoft people. So we're going to use this 3D library that I just showed you, Urho, to do this. So it's a very simple app. I'm going to run up to here, right? And notice one thing that I'm doing here. I am not evaluating the whole workbook at once. I could, but I'm not going to. Because then, you know, it's not as fun. And what this little app is going to do is just going to create a couple of visual nodes. Now, one thing that you need to know about Urho is that Urho is a system. There's a game. The game people have a name for this, and I can't remember what it is. It's like a component system, something like that. And the idea is that you have nodes, and nodes actually only have a location on the screen. That's all they have. They don't have, there's nothing else. There's no visuals to it. There's nothing. It's just a node. You stick a node there and it does nothing. It's useless. You need to attach components to it. And there's multiple components. One of these components is giving it a view, something that you can visualize, right? And we're going to do that in here. Or also, you can add, for instance, some physics. So if you attach some physics properties to it, then next thing you know, the object is falling down, right? Or you can add attractions or gravity or things like that. So in this particular case, what I'm doing is I'm going to create a couple of these objects. So I create a child, I create a node for the first bar, and then I attach a bar, just a bar that gives you a visual representation. That's all I do. Right, so I'm going to execute this little code up to here, and it shows you these four boxes with a plane at the bottom. And then I can execute, I can assign different heights. This, and every time I press shift return, it reevaluates that line. So you can see how that changes every time. And I can, you know, I can change this to something else like, what would be, cyan. And then I need to re-execute this one. So I hope that you can use this for a lot of 3D visualization in your applications. Now, you're probably thinking, Miguel, this is quite lame, and I understand. First of all, it's not that pretty. You know, in this day and age, there's a lot better things to demo. So what I'm going to show you now is a little demo that we put together to show you something more interesting. So again, I'm gonna run up to here, and I'm gonna get my little window. I'm gonna stash that bad boy here, okay? And I'm gonna walk you through what I'm doing here. The first thing that I'm gonna create is I'm gonna create a node, and I'm gonna attach a sphere component to it, right? Very nice, very pretty. It's a glorious magenta. Is that magenta? You can change the color to green, or I can change it to blue again. There it is. Then I'm gonna change the size, so we have something more sizable. Then there's a little routine here to download an asset. The idea is I don't have any assets on my machine, so I define this function. And this one, this thing that you see here, it's actually the result of a Google search for Earth texture. So if you go to Earth texture and you get this thing and you get one of these puppies, turns out that it's you know, it's one of these images, right? So you get one of those. So all I'm gonna do is I'm gonna download this thing and then I'm gonna set the material to the sphere to that. So now we got the texture wrapped around the sphere. And then I'm gonna run an action. Actions are things that we borrowed from Cocos2D. And it allows you to create very simple animations on your product. So in this particular case, what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna add an action that repeats forever, that rotates the object. So all it's gonna do is it's gonna rotate. I'm gonna say it's gonna rotate over 1 second, and this is how much it's gonna rotate. So now I got my planet rotating, right? You can imagine already, I'm gonna use this in HoloLens. Yes, you will. And now I'm gonna create again a node with a sphere. It's gonna be gray, I'm gonna make it a little bit smaller, and I'm gonna position it just on the side of my planet. You see that? That's a nice little moon there, right? Very nice. And I'm gonna make it rotate again. No, but I'm not gonna make it rotate on its axis. Instead, I'm gonna make it rotate around Earth. So there goes my rotation. You see that nice shadow? That's what you get with a nice 3D engine like Urho. And we're gonna put a texture so it looks like an actual moon, right? But this is not very inspiring. You've never seen anything like this. So I'm gonna create another kind of component. This is called a skybox. And a skybox is a component that essentially provides a cube. It's a cube of six sides that it lives around your world. And it gives you this impression. You use that typically to put you know, some sky or some you know, some trees in the horizon or some stuff like that. And once I do that, I have you know, I have now what looks like a very professional looking space simulation. And you can probably put some shooters in there. And I'm just gonna run this last command, app move camera, and all that does is it lets me basically manipulate this from within the world, right? So I'm just moving the camera here, getting close to the moon. And that's it. We have about 10 minutes of Q&A, or Sandy can come on stage and now show you Urho, but running on Android, with a cute little game that we built in about a week. Cute little game? Sandy, come on in. So just as a matter of background, this is a game that we built to test the engine and see how complicated it was. Go ahead. And it was built by my friend Igor.
All right, I'm on. Thank you, Miguel. So yeah, Miguel just showed pretty much how Urho Sharp works, and it's a really cool system. What we have here is a game, and I actually have it running already. It's this really cool little shooting game. It's 3D. You're flying around, you're shooting these bad guys, they're shooting back at you. And this is just a sample that, you know, comes with Urho Sharp. And this was my first time ever playing with it. And I've been playing with it, and the problem that I have is that it doesn't take long for me to die. I seem to lose a lot. So I wanted to, of course I work on the inspector, so I wanted to use the inspector to try to fix this problem without having to quit the app, tweak the code, rebuild over and over and over again. So, forgot to copy some code here. So, So the first thing I do is I connect. This is directly from Visual Studio. We have a little button here to start inspecting the game. So I need to bring in a few namespaces. That's probably enough. And then I need to set up the inspector to actually use the game's main loop. So the interesting thing about the inspector is that it knows about Android, but it doesn't know anything about Urho. So invoke, there it is. It doesn't know anything about Urho. So normally, when you start executing code from the inspector, it's running it on the Android main loop. We have to kind of tweak it and tell it, no, okay, Urho's got its own main loop. So if I wanted to look at this game, I'd want to figure out what is going on that's making this plane so big. So let's take a look at it. We have sample game is our actual game engine. There it is. So we'll start again. I keep dying. This plane's just too big. So we can dive into there. We can see that there is a player, and that's got its own node, just like Miguel was describing before. And the node has a scale. Where is it? Here we go. And the scale is 0.85. So clearly that is not a size that's working out for us. So if we wanted to mess with it, we could change the player's health value to be a little bit bigger too. Let's do that actually. Let's make me have a lot of health. And then while we're gonna live forever, we can start messing with the scale of the node. So what was it, 0.83? So let's try something else. Let's try 0.1 and see what that looks like. So I think I could probably play all day this way. But at the same time, it's not very challenging. Let's pick something else, maybe 3.5. Okay, that looks better. You like guys like that? Okay. So, thank you. So now that I found the setting that I like, I'm actually gonna put that in the game settings so that next time I die, you know, that's what we'll have. Oh, and let me change the health again so that we die eventually here. Boom. Okay, so what else can we do? So I thought it would be cool if anytime I picked up a coin, if I actually gained health. But then as I was looking at the sample, I realized that although obviously there is health, it's not shown at all in the game. So let's actually add that. So if we made, Urho has not just, you know, shapes and skyboxes and everything, it also has some sort of normal UI elements. So in the game, we can create a piece of text and we'll call it zero life to start. And we can add it to the actual UI of the game. What did I do wrong? Oh, we have to add it to the root of the game. There we go. So that pops right in. And we can start messing with that if we wanted to. We could change the alignment, change the horizontal alignment to put it in the center. No, that actually looks like crap. Okay, so move that back. And keep that there. But we actually want to hook it up to the game and see it change. So how about every time the player's health changes, we just hook into that event, okay? Right, so every time the player's health changes, we'll set the value of this label. And we can use C# 6 interpolated strings because we're using the Roslyn compiler here, which is awesome. So what's the game? Game.player.health, right? So let's see. Let's hook that up. There we go, we've got 70 life. And every time we get hit, it's going down, it's going down, it's going down. So basically, without ever having to restart this app, I can start playing around, tossing components on. Honestly, Urho Sharp is just a really great system to use with the inspector and just mess with it as long as the game's running. And I didn't have to shut it down and recompile once. So yeah, that's pretty much that's it. And I think we have time for questions.
Yeah, is that true? And you can save this workbook as well. So we have 4 minutes and 40 seconds for your questions. The gentleman on the Boston cap. Can you use the inspector on Windows to analyze the iOS? Soon, very soon. We just got a new build of the inspector uploaded today. In fact, inspector and workbooks are the same thing. It's how you launch it, but everything that we show you today is live, and you can start testing it right now. And that particular feature is coming once we have the iOS simulator that we're launching later this month. Yes? Can we get a prize match guarantee? I don't know. Talk to finance. No, if you purchase Xamarin recently, you will get a refund. Yes?
Is this, okay, sorry. I was just wondering with, is there any plans where you could actually like build a library that could be consumed by an already existing natively written Java or Objective-C app?
Yeah, the question is if there's plans for us to turn an existing or turn C# code into a library that can be consumed and linked, I suppose, with an existing iOS or Java project. It doesn't exist yet, but yes, it's very much planned, and yes, it will very much happen.
Thanks.
Excuse me?
Yes?
Can you make the Earth spin the other way?
I'm sorry?
Can you make the Earth spin the other way?
Yes, yes, you can rotate the Earth the other way. Thank you.
Sets in the west?
Was it wrong?
Yeah.
Maybe you should build a validator into the language.
You got us, yes?
The question is about Xamarin Forms.
Yes?
We've been trying for the last few months to get it run on Windows phones, and we've not been successfully able to do that.
To run Xamarin Forms on Windows Forms?
Windows phone. I mean, we've been trying to, it runs perfectly, we compile perfectly for iOS, we compile perfectly for Android, but when we try to compile it for Windows 10 phone, we still have a long way to go. For a serious application, for a simple hello world, it's going to work.
Yeah, we'll fix it. Put a bug report. No, two things. The UWP support was on preview, and it's now becoming, we're graduating it very soon to stable. And the second piece is it will be open source. So you will no longer be at our mercy to address some of those issues. But we're very well aware, and we're working on that.
Thank you.
Does the inspector work with WPF?
It does work with WPF, yes.
Awesome.
Is there a...
Hold on, there's a question here. Would it be, what is the question? Easier to buy native libraries? Is it easier to build native libraries than it currently is? Yes. In fact, Aaron Bokover, who's sitting just next to you, has built enough support, and he can walk you through some of it. Some of those things are not trivial, but we can certainly improve it. And Aaron is the person that can, if you have some feedback or this is too obnoxious, can you help me there? He's the man that can help you. Thank you. And yes?
I don't think you can see me.
32 seconds.
What about integration of Visual Studio Code and Xamarin Studio?
Visual Studio Code and Xamarin, well, we currently do not have plans of integrating with Visual Studio Code because when you build mobile apps, it's not just the code, but there's a lot of artifacts that go with it. So maybe one day, and you can certainly use it to edit your code and compile with MS Build, but building the final thing requires more IDE support. And we're done. Thank you very much for coming.